Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ongi etorri, as they say in Basque land. Ongi etorri, which is Cade Mila Fáilte, Fáilte over Fad. Welcome. Hola, bienvenido, and welcome everybody to the podcast. This is the Tommy and Hector Show with Loretta Blewett. And
powered by Acast.
Powered by the wonderful machine that's Acast. It's an engine. It is an engine. To anybody who is listening in wherever you are, whether you're in a park in Sydney with the headphones on and it's 28 degrees, whether you're working on a turbine in northern Finland on a 6-month contract, whether you're walking around just outside Faneuil Hall in Boston with the headphones on,
or doing a 50 to 20 year stretch from Murder up in Mountjoy,
whether you're sitting outside the infirmary in Waterford waiting on the results if you're pregnant or not,
or if you've been kidnapped and you're in the boot of a taxi and the driver is passing some time
and you're driving your tractor down in Knockmore,
whether you're on the sideline watching the children playing football and you said you'll get a little half hour fix, we welcome you to the podcast Ongi Etorri.
Now, do you speak Basque as well as Spanish?
No, Basque is made up of X's and Z's and Y's, a very ancient language.
It's like the lads in Africa do the clicking. The X-H-O-S-I fellas. That's the name of the tribe. The Zoxies. But it's all the speaking clicks. Clicks and clacks.
All right.
You wouldn't know what they'd be on about. They'd be shouting at you and pointing sticks at you.
There's a few lads down in Ballina that talk like that as well, I think.
That's a cleft palate. That's a different dose altogether.
I'll give you three words in Basque, the only ones I know. Kaixo is hello. K-A-I-X-O. Kaixo. And Ongi Etorri is welcome. And Iskarigasku is something like...
It sounds a bit Polish, doesn't it? Like, or is it just the way you're pronouncing them?
Polish, Chinese, Maori.
Polish, yeah, it's a different world. The Basque, after spending a couple of years in the Basque country, when I started speaking Spanish over there with them, and they knew I was living in Bilbao, they love freckles on your skin, they love blue eyes, and they love red hair, because they are pure Celts.
Oh yeah,
so you're Celtic. There's a link. Yeah. So they were happy to see me. Illegorri is redhead. Illegorri. Isn't language great? We've spoken about this before, but that's my welcome to everyone around the world. How are ye two?
Well, I want to, I have just noticed that I am willing, ready and able at any time of the day to fall asleep.
Oh, I thought you were going to be so enthusiastic there about something.
Has anybody else noticed that?
I was expecting a
massive... I thought you were like, I'm ready to be positive.
To have another baby, to get married, to have your vows done again.
No, what? I just noticed that at any hour of the day... And all I need to do is let the relevant authorities know, be that the people I'm in the car with me or the kids or the wife, I could fall asleep.
That's called narcolepsy, I think.
Narcolepsy is when you fall asleep.
Yes.
I'm talking about the desire to fall asleep.
Oh, right,
yeah. I could have, like, I was up to, I don't know if I told you this before, but I'm up at 6:30 every morning.
Right. Never heard that before.
But I start getting text messages at 6:30 from him now.
By the
I'm
way,
up.
Did you notice the text last night at 9:30? And he was Tommy, everyone okay for tomorrow? Loretta, 2 minutes later.
Yeah, and he was in his slippers and his pipe.
I was in
his
bed.
Whiskey.
I went to bed at 8:30 last night.
That's what?
I went to bed at 8:30.
For the whole night and you slept?
Yes, I didn't. Yeah.
I'd have a pain in my head by 10
o'clock. I got on with you.
Do you know what happened? I get into the bed half eight, and I was and like I had the glass of whiskey beside the bed.
Ah, stop it!
And the pajamas and the cashmere cardigan on, the woolly socks, and I always sleep with my hat on. Always like Rip Van Winkle, never take the hat off. And I fell asleep, and I say I was probably asleep around a quarter past 9:20, and I woke up at 1 o'clock in the morning, and I didn't know what time it was.
Right.
You know, and I went over, and I have a watch that lights up in the dark. Right. Now, I was, you know, when you wake up and you want to know how long you've left in the bed.
Yes.
I looked at my watch and it lit up 1 a.m. And I actually said out loud, I love 1 o'clock.
There is something lovely about that.
I had another 5.5 hours of sleep ahead. It's fantastic. But I'd fall asleep anytime.
So now we need to address something there. You said you went to bed with the whiskey again. So we now know that you're back on the whiskey again.
Well, I got a bottle. So I had to drink, but the bottle is finished last night.
It's gone now, yeah.
It's gone.
Bottle of Jemmy, was it?
Yes, and it's gone now. All okay. Done. But I'm just, even though I got a tremendous amount of hours of sleep last night, and I was up early this morning, but we got the kids out to school and did the morning drive to Salt Hill and back, dropping the girls to Salerno. I came back to the house and I swear to God, I was fucking falling asleep at the table.
What?
So I was falling asleep at the kitchen table.
Is there
and only that you're here now, I'm hyped up, like I'm ready to talk. But if he hadn't come here, I'd be head being me hands on the kitchen table. Or
would you have a nap on a daily basis? Like
I mightn't get the opportunity. Yesterday, I went back running, went back lifting weights.
Yes.
Came back
looking great.
Asleep. Had to sleep when I came back. What's like? Do I have long term invisible COVID?
Is it?
Maybe you do.
What do you mean? I'm exhausted.
Is there after a little bit of food, do you go in and have a little lie down?
Oh, but that's to do with the amount of carbs you take into your body. I'm talking about that would happen to me, but at any time,
And this is only recently.
Yeah, well, recently enough. But then I looked at the dog, right? So the dog was up at me at 6:30 this morning, right? And he goes running around the place until about 9:15, and then he's asleep in the hall.
But he's a dog.
Yeah, but he's smart, you see.
What I'm saying is that he's a natural organism, right? And it's natural for his organism to be up and then a snooze and to be up and then a snooze. And maybe that's the way I'm designed.
You're taking dog-like.
Well, if
features.
You think about it, when the kids were born, my boys were babies. I remember my brother Freddie saying, who his kids were a tiny bit older, he said, "Now here's the golden rule." And I suppose any parents out there would recognise this. You sleep when the babies sleep. So now, why don't we sleep when we want to sleep? I mean, getting little 40 winks when you have a 6-month-old and you're up at 4 a.m. is vital. That's why don't we do that throughout our lives?
I tell you why, because the military-industrial complex has taken charge of our sleeping hours. And it's only since I was told by a very, very clever man that it's only since the Industrial Revolution in England in the 1700s or 1800s, that's when people started having sex lying down. Before that,
right.
When we were an agricultural economy, people would be riding standing up at all hours of the day and all hours of the night.
Just around the house.
Just around the field. You might spot your favourite one and you go in behind the hawthorn.
Like a cow and bull job.
The bale of hay.
So when industrialisation came into it and we had to be working from 9 till 6, right, that did away with the nap. Nobody was having naps then and nobody was doing any daytime riding. The only people doing daytime riding and sleeping now are housewives and maybe fellas on the night shift or those on the dole. People on the dole are the only ones doing riding standing up during the day. That's a fact.
If they can find someone else that's to ride.
They're even taking advantage of themselves.
Well, yeah,
you know
I suppose,
what I mean?
Yeah.
Fellas who do be working. Now, there'd be loads of fellas around the work who'd say, "I'll just pop into the Jacks for a quick one by myself." They'd be unusual.
Yeah.
You know, but it's most of the time that your work dictates too much of your
maybe
in this
human
pattern.
I think maybe since we started the podcast, I agree with you, maybe you're getting a bit more tired. I did get up there about 2 weeks ago and went and had a nap about an hour later.
Did you hear yourself there? Did get up there about an hour ago.
Just for the sake of the listeners.
A country song.
Just for the sake of the listeners, it is a hectic schedule, this podcast recording. Once a week. No, but for an hour or so, we talk into the microphone. And Loretta will be pure bet at the end of it.
I'm wrecked. I don't like talking to people after we
finish. Would you go for a snooze when you go back up to Mayo?
Nobody is allowed to ring. Speak to me after the podcast is over.
Shattered.
I'm sick of talking to people.
At the top of the show, I said I lived in the Basque Country for a few years. The Spanish have been taking a siesta since time began. They have it down to a T.
I'm sure Irish people were doing the same, but I'm telling you, it's once we started working for the man. That's when all schnoozing stopped.
When I was teaching English in Bilbao for a couple of years, the routine was I'd head off in the morning, do a couple of hours, I'd come back round my area, get my little bit of bread, bit of lunch, I'd have a lunch. This was at 12:30, 1 o'clock, and I wasn't due back in class till 6 or 6:30. I would watch Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, El Príncipe de Bel-Air, in Spanish, and I'd go into my room and I'd pull down the persianas, the shutters, because the Spanish are smart. Mm. They don't use curtains. They have these Persian shutters that block out and complete darkness.
Oh, yeah, made of wood or something.
And the heat then, made of wood. And then you're lying on the bed and you're sweating and you can hear budgerigards on a balcony across from you. And you can hear, hola, Miguel. And then all of a sudden you're asleep. And there's not a sound for the siesta in Spain. And then at 6:30, 6 o'clock, the shops open up again. Life happens again. People are out walking. And then you're back into it. They're very, very smart. Mm. The siesta is integral. Part of Spanish culture and Latin American culture. And that's smart, isn't it?
And is that anything to do with heat?
I was thinking that.
I lived in Africa from 1973 to 1976. I was only a child at the time.
I didn't even know he was in Africa at the time.
he thought he was in Galway.
I just thought it was a heat wave in Donegal. And some people are after catching a fierce tan. That's what I thought.
How can you remember all these stories? You were only three.
But
unbelievable memory.
Unbelievable. But us, it was too hot to go to school in the afternoon. So we used to start school at 7 in the morning and we'd finish at 12. So because it was too hot to be inside in a building during the afternoon. And we'd then, so you'd head home or go to, there's an outdoor swimming pool in the town. We go to that one, whites only, if my memory serves me well. But again, I had nothing to do with that. But I'm wondering, is it with the siesta in Spain, is it a heat thing as opposed to...
I think it must come through the Moorish, so the Northern Africa.
The Africans came up, invaded Spain, but we must now have a short sleep between 12 and 4 o'clock.
The Moors.
I tell you, if we did that in Ireland, we wouldn't go back to school in the evening. People wouldn't go back.
Where's
in the morning.
He's gone for siesta.
I'm not going back there. I have something else to do.
Is there an Irish word for siesta? There must be. Tamaline bug or something.
No, 40 winks. 40 winks.
No, Irish. That's Gaelge.
Yeah, there must be a little
some
word.
Kind of a phrase.
Yeah, I used to love that, watching The French Prince of Bel-Air. Then I'd be up in my class.
The French Prince of
Which leads me into a good story. Here we go. This has sparked a good one. I was teaching English as a foreign language for 4 years, and many tens of thousands.
What age were you?
Right, and for me, I was in my late 20s, and right. I was living in Bilbao.
Weren't in your late 20s, you were your early 20s.
Early 20s, probably, yeah. But Tommy, I can't remember like you when you were three in Africa. I'm just trying to give a general thing to the audience here.
God, you learned a lot as a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
What did that mean, Tommy?
That means someone passed the ball to young Tierney, he's out in the wing, no one's marking him.
Right.
He learned at 3.
Yeah.
So I was teaching English as a foreign language. Went over to see me missus, living on the Aran Islands. I got me double door.
Hang on, whoa.
Okay, here.
I thought we were in Spain teaching English as a foreign language.
I want to paint a picture.
Where is he now?
I was living on the Aran Islands on Inishman.
Oh, for God's sake.
I was living on the Aran Islands on Inishman. I got me double dole off Pat John, the postman.
Right.
Double dole, lovely.
How did you get the double dole?
Because I was going on a week's holidays to Spain to see my missus. And I got... Did you ever get the double dole?
It's
a brilliant one. You get it before Fela. I got it before Fela.
But what, did they just give it to you? They knew you were going somewhere.
You tell them you're going on holidays and they give you the double dole.
Goodness.
What a great
name. Yeah, of course.
You get the double dole, yeah.
So you'd say, oh, I'm away next week, so could you just double it up?
No, you can't abuse the situation here.
Yeah. Once a year you'd get it. Well, you get it at Christmas
and,
by law.
And Fela.
And the bonus. You get the double dole and the bonus. Right.
You wouldn't milk it now. You can't milk the double. You can't say every week you're going for the double dole.
No. Right. You'd run out of weeks fairly rapid.
So I said to Pat John of Arda in Inishman, I said, Pat John, Tamagol go Tierna Moscow, go Bilbao, go Mahali. Fiddle him a double dole all. He said, Keen to. So he gave me the double dole and I hopped on Can I tell you the whole story here?
Please. Well, go on. We're waiting.
I brought a two-man tent on me back.
Oh, the Lord.
And a sheepskin jacket. And I left Inishman on the Rose of Arran. And I got to Russellville. And then I got the bus from Russellville into Air Square. And then I got the bus from Air Square to the roundabout at Oran Moor.
She should be wrecked already.
Now, this is and then he took the double tent out and he lied on the side of the road.
So it was about 8 o'clock in the evening at this stage, and I was hitching to Navan. I was going to spend a night in Navan before I got the boat to Rosslare. So my thumb is out. It's now 7 o'clock in the evening in Oran Moor at the roundabout. You know the final roundabout before you went left at the football pitch? Then it's 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock.
Still standing
out,
there.
Nobody there. And then it was dusk, and then I went, this is one of the worst hitching experiences I've ever had. So what I did was, I took the tent out.
You did not.
And I went into the football pitch around the back of the community centre and a lovely bit of grass, and I pitched the tent and I went in and had a great sleep. I woke up the next morning, packed it all away, went out on the roundabout about half
Vagabond.
Eight. Went out on the roundabout at half eight, stuck the thumb out. Where you going? Trim. Oh my word, all the way to Trim. Got to Navan, had the night in Navan, got to Fishguard, went to Spain, blah, 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 blah. Right, so I arrived in Bilbao.
Yeah.
So we're in Bilbao. Yes. So I'm teaching English as a foreign language to my first students.
Now hang on, now is this the 2 weeks here, is this the double dole fortnight?
Sorry, I'm mixing my stories up here.
Oh, now we're confused because we want to know what you did to the double dole.
Welcome to another episode of CSI Storytelling.
Oh, can I just say, that was one of my journeys to Spain.
Yes.
Right. Anyway. So anyway.
Another time.
Cut a long story short, I ended up staying in Bilbao, teaching English as a foreign language, TEFL. So I'm in my Spanish class in Bejal, in Algorta. It's the south side of Bilbao. It's Bejal Idiomas Language School. It's an old building. There's 25 or 30 teachers in the building. And then as you graduate in from 13, 14-year-olds, they might say 6 months later, you might have 18-year-olds advanced English. So I graduated pretty quick, and I had a bunch of 19 and 20-year-old Basques, girls and boys.
Had you done a TEFL course?
Yeah, I did in Leeson Street for 2 days.
Okay.
2 days?
Oh, so you're well qualified. Oh, you're overqualified. So.
Jeez,
2 days.
He did a double course.
Did you do it twice?
I got the double TEFL and the double dole. So, and there's a few 21-year-olds in the class, and we're there going.
Beautiful looking Spanish people.
Yeah, oh, it's unbelievable. And
unbelievable.
Unbelievable. And this is a new word.
There's no V.
I'm in the class.
It's unbelievable.
6 months into my Spanish, in my bachelor's journey, I'm trying to show off my Spanish. And I'm there to them. Okay, today we're going to wrap it up by talking about our favourite food really quickly. Rapid fire around the classroom. Miguel, we'll start with you, and Jose Maria, Sonia, vamos por allá. We're going to, and then you will say your favorite food, and I will repeat it in Spanish because I'm learning Spanish, and as you know, I don't speak it very well. But you can tell me what I'm saying wrong, I'll tell you what you're saying wrong, all about your favorite food.
Lovely technique. Lovely.
So I go, okay, Miguel, open with you. Your favorite food, please. And be nice and give me, paint a picture. He goes, Hector, my favorite food is hamburgers. I love hamburgers and I love salad. Hamburgers and salad. Me gusta hamburguesas y ensalada. And he goes, bien. Oh, we go round the class. Sonia, what is your favorite food? For me, I love steak with potatoes and chuletas y patatas. Very good. Miguel, what do you like? Blah, blah. So it's going round the class. Then this girl right down the end. I said, Maria, what's your favorite food? And she goes, my favorite food is chicken. Chicken with chips and salad. And I went, oh, te gusta polla, yeah? La polla y patatas fritas y ensalada. Te gusta la polla. And in Spain, in the Basque country, they do the hand signal like it's like a chicken at your mouth. And I was like this, te gusta la polla, yeah, polla. Because if it's really tasty, you start putting your hand up to your mouth, going, oh, sí, sí, polla. Yeah. But then they all started laughing at me. The whole fucking class splitting their hose laughing. All the lads were elbowing each other. And they were going, boy, yeah, boy. And I was there. I was really, I started going, what did I say? And then this guy goes, Hector, you cannot say polla. You cannot say polla. You can't say me gusta polla. Because you cannot. You have to say me gusta pollo. Pollo. Pollo is the chicken. Poya, poya is your penis, your cock, your cock. You're just, I love dick. I was there going to this beautiful looking Spanish girl, Basque girl. Oh, I love dick. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Love it. Me gusta la polla. Yeah, yeah.
And a little bit of cock and salad and some chips.
So the lesson today is never, a pollo is chicken. boya is cock. I was reading somewhere recently that the mind can take on board a lot of things during your life. It's a computer. It's far more powerful than anything we have. But when it comes to the frontal part of your lobe, there's an area there for specific face recognition in your brain.
Facial recognition software.
In your brain.
Yeah.
This has been going on for thousands of years. They say your brain has 10,000 faces. And after that, it can't take any more. So in your lifetime, if you've seen 10,000 people, you can't take, you can't, the brain won't recognise that person if you come again.
How about Bono?
What about him?
Well, they pay to 100,000 people every night.
But he doesn't see all their faces.
He doesn't
but he'd see the front row every night for 35 years.
I was wondering about that. Is that people that you actually have to interact with?
Interacting. That over the course of stopping in Ballandine on the way here to at the, that Supermax and that petrol station, that you will recognise the person at the...
So a school teacher, we'll say.
A school teacher, you'll always recognise your school. What I'm saying is the brain has the capacity for 10,000 faces to remember. After that, it's like, did I meet you before? Oh, it's gone. Your capacity is over. And I'm finding now that I have to really look at people's faces for a few minutes while they're talking to me and I haven't a clue who they are. And they completely know who I am. And they know me well.
That's an unfair advantage because they know you.
I'd be there looking, going, right, look at the eyebrows. No. And then I'd be trying to dig the conversation. This could be standing in the super value queue going, yeah. Not a clue who this person is. Talking away and going, yeah. Clubhouse last year. How are you?
I have you now, as I say.
Do you know what I mean?
I have a technique for when I forget somebody's name. It works all the time. I just think of a name and I say it with such confidence.
Oh, God. No, please.
How are you, Vaughn?
I say it with such confidence that it stops them in their tracks.
And then they're not sure if they are.
And they're not even sure of their own name. What they'll do is then they'll tell me their name, and it's not like I've forgotten their name. Is that I have them? So say I met you, Larisha, right? And you went, "How are you, Tommy?" I said, "Susan Foley, how are you?" And you'd be there. No, actually, it's
he thinks I'm somebody else.
Yeah,
well, that's a good idea.
Yeah. That's
good. Apparently, if you say when you meet someone, so you meet Hector, and you say their name three times when you meet them first, like
Hector.
You won't ever forget it. Now, I don't know. I have a massive problem with remembering people's names.
I also, in the supermarket, if I meet someone who knows me and I don't remember them and we're just there and I'm getting scallions and they're going for that punnet of tomatoes, I'll just go, just as I walk by them, I'll say, "Hi, see," I won't pronounce the name quickly, or if it's the butcher, "Oh my God." And they think I've said something and they think I know their name, but I haven't a clue.
My technique is much better.
It is
good. The butcher waves to you, you go, "Johnny Finnerty!" He's thinking, "Who the fuck is Johnny Finnerty?"
Or it could be Johnny Finnerty.
So isn't it amazing to think that your brain can recognise 10,000 and store it, but after that, it's a free-for-all.
Well, you've obviously met 10,000 people. You've met 10,000 people. But
Larisha, you've met them in shops and post offices and everywhere you go, think of the people you might regularly meet in your daily routine over the last 30 years.
I can remember people's faces with their names. I don't have the capacity for that.
I'm very bad for that. I haven't a clue, but I need at least 3 minutes of conversation. And then I'm like Sherlock Holmes, pickpocketing them. And then finally my brain goes, "I think it's Micheál." Saying the word Micheál.
Susan Foley.
Micheál, I'll talk to you. Okay, but...
No, it's...
Susan Foley, that's
just
brilliant.
Just comes straight out of the... Enda McNulty!
Jesus, how are you?
Maureen Flaherty, how are you? Oh, I'm going to try that in the supermarket next week.
I had a wonderful thing happen to me during the week. Wonderfully interesting thing. So I got involved with local GAA as a trainer. And be training young fellas now. Wouldn't be in secondary school yet, but love it. And I may have said to you before, you'd fall in love with them, like the spirit of them and the
innocence.
Innocence, but the talents they have. And the way talent manifests itself differently in different people. Like one fella is amazing at solos. He couldn't run 2 yards, but he can solo with his knee, with his calf, with his both feet, with his shoulders. He's phenomenal. Anyway, so I was having a bit of this one fella. I was having just difficulty communicating with them.
You should put that fella in gold. Right. It's got it solo and just so. Yeah. Just a future reference.
And he was kind of, he's always looking up at the sky. And I'd be telling him, he takes and he stops playing every 6 minutes to tie his shoelaces. And he's always looking over the ditches. And he's, so at the end of the session, the coaches have a little kind of get together. And I, talking to one of the boys, and I was saying, I have awful problems with your man, you know, the particular young fella. And I says to him, he's very talented, but he's a pure dreamer.
Wanderer, yeah.
Pure dreamer. And your man said to me, Ara, maybe he's right. And I thought that was a wonderful way of, wouldn't you love a fella like that to be in charge of kids?
I thought you of all people would have appreciated that young fella's stance on life.
I suppose, but I guess in a military industrial pursuit such as under 12 football, you want to be organised. But I just thought, maybe he's right.
Yeah,
it was such a marvellous way of approaching young people. And you'd hope that, wouldn't you love to have a headmaster like that?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you love if that man now was Minister for Education?
Yeah.
And there was room in every day given for young fellows who just wanted to stare at ditches.
Look out the window.
Fantastic, you know. And
oh, nice.
I remember I was in Garbally, boarding school in Ballinasloe. I was there for 2 years. And they have these things called the Social Concern Awards. So there's an awards day, right? The best athlete in the school is given an award. The most academic young fella is given an award. All these kind of things just to kind of publicly acknowledge the efforts of... And every year they gave out 5 social concern awards because it was a diocesan school. It was a boarding school run by priests. St. Vincent de Paul was big in the school. So, and I guess in years gone by, it might have been a training ground for priests. But now that wasn't happening so much, they still kept the social concern awards to kind of, just to acknowledge the non-academic good work that fella's done. They wanted to give me one, right? Now, I got into so much trouble in that school. I boycotted my summer exams. Summer exams came around and I said, I'm not doing these because the Irish educational system isn't properly attuned to the human spirit. So I boycotted the exams.
You on your own?
Yeah, the only fella out of 350, each...
Big statement.
Big statement. And after my parents spending all the money on the boarding school as well... And the exam was handed down to me. And for the 9 exams, I just sat there with my arms folded and the ink never touched the paper. I got 0 in everything. Right? I started a magazine in the school called 199. And it was full of articles about apartheid and had graffiti and CND and Amnesty International and all this type of stuff. And I started, myself and Hector were in school together, debating was big in Nav, you know, it was a big important thing. So I started, there was no debating in Garbally when I went there, so I started the debating thing, you know. Now, when I was given the Social Concern Award.
Social Concern Award.
And the award.
For social concern.
Goals too.
There was 5 of us getting them. And there was one fella. And he had done a fierce amount of work with St. Vincent de Paul Society in the school. Done a lot of outreach programs, helped a lot of old people in terms of loneliness, would have done a lot of just on the ground activity with
community. Good lad himself. Right?
He was very proud and honoured to get his Social Concern Award. But on reading that I was going to get one as well, refused to accept it. Refused to accept his award because he thought the fact that I was being given one devalued the whole thing.
Mm.
And, He said that all that fucker does is stare out fucking windows, watching his hole. And that just...
Daydreaming
why
is a
did they want to give you that award, though?
I guess because the headmaster wanted just to acknowledge that even though I wasn't prospering academically, that I was still...
Included.
Yeah, yeah. I was still engaged in some way in the school. And, you know, you have to... As a fella said to me one time, it takes all types of people to make a world.
It does.
And you have to acknowledge that people
Absolutely.
Are gifted in
their own
but
way.
Isn't,
in
isn't,
different
it's
ways.
Not a
so
bad
did
thing
you
to
take
say.
The award?
Of course I took the award. I remember my French teacher. I won't say her name, but a French teacher from Donegal even said to me, why are they giving one to you? All you do is sit in your hole and look out the window. So I just thought that, that it just reminded me, those whole, the coach saying that to me on the sideline last week, Arash, yes, maybe he's right. Just set
but
this
we're
kind
all,
of...
Shouldn't we all be more daydreaming? Daydreaming, what a lovely way to put it. Daydreaming, when do we give time to daydream? And oh, he's a daydreamer, she's a daydreamer. Oh, that lad's no good in school, he's a daydreamer.
Beautiful.
What a beautiful two
my,
words
my
to put together.
My nephew is only started school now, he's only five, but he was in Nínra before that last year. And the teacher said, Oscailgo, but I'll say it in English because I don't know how to say it in Irish, that he spent most of his time looking out the window. And he says to her, well, that's because we've done the letter 5 10 times. And he said, I don't understand why you have to keep doing the same thing over and over and over again.
Tell us about reading out the death notices on the radio.
Oh, so obviously, I used to work in Midwest, and you'd have, if you were doing a certain show, you'd have to maybe, you did a lot of other jobs in there as well as doing a show. And they said, you'll have to read the death notices one of the days. And I thought, oh, Jesus Christ, please don't ask me.
And what was your fear of it?
I don't like reading stuff that's written down. I don't have no problem talking.
As opposed to reading stuff that's...
written down. That you have to read. Like it's not like I can't read, but I feel a pressure when there's a microphone or when there's, like, again, reading at mass. Like, I there's an extra pressure on me when I have to read at mass. Because I am anticipating there's a word going to pop up on the next line that I'm just not going to be able to pronounce.
Okay.
So... the death notices, and like,
give me
again,
a link. Give do the whole link from what the song you played into the segue.
I think I was
Midwest
doing,
is a classic station.
So I think before, no, I wasn't, like, I didn't go, and that's Stevie Wonder now for the death notices. You know, I didn't do it that way, but that's how, you know, yeah, you wouldn't, it's not that kind of a link. You'd have to do the death notices first, and you have to have a little bit of a somber voice for the death notices, because no,
that's the new one from Declan Early.
Yeah, yeah. And here's the death notices. So I see, it's, you're very specific. People listen to the death notices religiously and do not get the village or the town wrong that they're from.
Yeah.
And you know the pronunciations.
Of course,
places.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus Christ. So it's always a joke, like, in my house, if they ever heard Larissa doing the death notices. So they start off, the death has occurred of XX. And then it's the name of the village. And I'm thinking, oh, fuck it, I don't know how to pronounce this. And you run past it quick. And you do the next bit, you know, and then it's, you know, the funeral will proceed to St. Mary's Church in Ahagower and blah, 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 blah. But it is absolutely a travesty to hear me reading the death notices. I just can't do it.
And then what,
like,
do you do straight after? And now here's the new one from Dickie just, Rock.
And then you go into the bingo. The bingo is very important as well. The bingo notices, bingo balls. But the death notices, I'd love to get a recording of me reading the death notices and play them for you. Oh, it's
and
bad.
Is it that you hesitate?
Yeah. And I panic on the word, like.
How many would you read out in one go?
Oh, there'd probably be 10 or 12, like. Or maybe it could be 15 on a busy day and, you know, 20 maybe. The dead
20
notices.
Dead people. What the fuck has gone on?
In Mayo. Yeah.
Would it be 12 o'clock in the day you do with a big...
The death notices, I think, are on at 8:15, maybe, I don't know, 5 o'clock.
Probably one of the most popular things on Midwest Radio.
In 8 o'clock in the morning, lunchtime, and then 5 o'clock in the evening. Rush hour times.
I'm telling you, there's great comfort in hearing the death notices.
Well, not for me reading them. Not
we'll
with me reading
to
them
get,
at all.
We'll have to get permission to just use a snippet.
Oh, it's a bad job. It's a bad job.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I tell you what I've noticed that my favorite part, I don't like national newspapers. I think I've told you that before. I think they have no manners. And I think there's great decency in Irish journalism, but the vast majority of it is to be found in local newspapers.
Oh, yeah.
They just have a cop on. They're not after salacious stories. They're not after hunting people who don't deserve it. They're just, and there's an edge to daily newspaper, national newspapers, which is just, it's ugly and I think it's toxic. But I love the provincial papers. I love the local papers. And I've realised over the past 2 years, I kind of noticed my habits. I get awful comfort. I get awful comfort from reading the death notices.
Oh,
I love it. I love just going on and I just seeing who has died. And to me, I don't know what the comfort is like. To me, they're like, they're gone ahead of me. Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like you're a long line of people, a huge tribe marching across the desert. And there's some people, I'll go on and see what it's like. And these people are way ahead of us and they've died. And you see their pretty little pictures in the death section.
Their little memorial section.
And they're looking at you and they're just going, there's nothing to worry about.
I've
made it to the far side. And one day, please God, very long in the distant future, please God, now not any day soon, that my photograph in the death notices will give people great comfort. Well, if Tommy Tiernan can die, I can fucking die too.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Before, it's important to that there are people going ahead of you. Before I learned how to drive, I was shitting myself. I'll never fucking learn this because it's too complicated. But then I used to see old women driving around the town. Fucking hell, if an old woman can drive a car, surely I can drive a car as well. So I went to, I had a few cash in the back pocket and I went to...
From the double dole.
And I bought a car and I had to get the car delivered
to
the house.
What was the first car?
Ford Focus. Way back.
I remember it. It was a light blue car.
No, it was green. It was light green.
That was green.
That was a very conservative car for you. Like
a Ford. I
didn't have an awful lot of money.
First car stuff.
I had a Toyota Corolla. Like it was like a nun's car. Looked like.
Yeah. But what happened was I used to take the young people to school every morning on a bicycle, and some days it would be raining, and then you'd have to get a taxi, and we weren't on very much money, so you couldn't be afford to get in a taxi all the time. And then I came into a bit of money from the stand up and said, we'll have to buy a car. It was getting to the stage now where the Indian taxi driver was saying to us, if you want, I can come in the morning and collect your child for you. So you don't have to be taking the child to school yourself. It'll be a one way trip.
Where was this?
This was in Galway. This was in Galway.
So he was just going to bring the child on his own.
So this fellow was, I will come to your house every morning at 25 past 8 and pick up your child and bring him to school, and you will trust me. You will trust me to give me your son and I will take him to school, no problem. And we just said, my partner at the time says, you better learn how to fucking drive. So I got a bit of cash together and I went to the garage and I says, I want a Ford Focus. And they said to me, right, okay, we'll take it for a spin. And I says, mighty job. So we went out to the car and I got into the passenger seat. And I said, and your mom was looking at me. I said, take it for a spin and we have a look at her. So we came back to the garage. I said, she drives like a dream. I'll buy it. He says, fair enough. When do you want to collect it? I says, collect it. You'll be delivering it to the fucking house. Because someone had told me the best way to learn how to drive is get a new car delivered to the house, because you'd be mortified that the neighbours looking at the new car and you not. So I learned in about, I think I took 10 lessons and I was able to drive. Mm. But that thing of there being people ahead of you doing showing you an example. So when I pick up the death notices every week, and that's it. If you do them in the Connacht Tribune, it is phenomenal the amount of people who in Ballinasloe who die. More people in Ballinasloe. I swear, if you look up the death notices of the Connacht Tribune, every person, they're all, I don't know.
Ballinasloe is a huge parish.
I don't know if it's old people from Spittle going on a drive and they die in Ballinasloe, but they're just, it's the amount of is phenomenal. But I take great comfort in that, you know.
What about putting the death notices on the radio?
Tell
us about Midwest.
Midwest was the first place ever to come up with the idea of having death notices on the radio daily. And then obviously all local radios followed suit after that. But it's a you know, it's a big money making.
It's a big money spin.
How do you mean? You know, they make
how
a lot of money.
How much does it cost?
How? Who makes money?
Narita.
The radio station makes money from the death.
It costs.
It costs you money for the death notice.
It costs a lot of money.
Fucking
to
scandalous.
How much,
I don't know.
Would you
I
say
think
in around
cost.
The area?
I would say it would cost you about €120.
What?
To announce.
To die?
Yes.
Jesus, if the fucking grief of it wasn't enough and you're going to meet the devil.
No, but you
and
see, the thing is, if you really want to make sure you're dead, you know, if people want to, you know, you want to highlight the fact that you're dead, you need to advertise it.
There you go. And local radios up and down the country.
You couldn't just let people figure it out for themselves. You haven't texted back in a while. I wonder what's wrong with Tom Tiernan. Is he fucking dead or what?
I would safely say that there are radio stations around the country making a considerable six-figure sum from the death notices.
I was doing a radio show once and I wasn't that long on the radio station. I wasn't familiar with the different times, you know, the death notices on at such and such a time. Anyway, I forgot. It was like a bank holiday and I forgot to play the death notices. There was... hell to pay.
Right.
Hell to pay. I'm listening to the radio for the death notices. There used to be people that would ring up and say, I heard someone died in Knockmore. Will you tell me who it is? Well, I mean, if it's important to you, you'll know they're dead, like. No, there was people that just wanted
that's brilliant.
To know. So they'd want, I'd go to that funeral if it was someone
they'd
from
ring
the
station.
Yeah, they'd ring the radio station and say,
but
someone died there in Ballina. Who was it? Jesus, like, hello. You know,
a general question.
Like, but it's because people get comfort out of it.
Yes.
It's that there's people gone ahead of you. You know, that they're paving the way.
I'd say
it's okay for Mary Ward. If Mary Ward can die, I tell two interesting things about death now. Do you know this phrase? I heard it in a play that John B. Keane wrote. This woman is throwing a curse on another woman and she roars out, "May you die roaring."
Oh, yeah. Mm.
I was down in Kerry and this fella comes up to me and he says, and people, when you're well known, people just come up to you and start conversations at random and mm-hmm. It's a marvel. It's a wonder to me. I love it. This fella comes up to me and he says, "I'm 93. And I says, "Well, what's that like?" And he says, "Well, he says, "I don't think about it that often." And he says, I'm going to die soon, he says. "I hope the last hour is the hardest." And I've been perplexed as to what he fucking meant, like.
Why didn't you ask him?
What did he, because he walked off then. Mm. What do you mean by that, the last hour is the hardest? And I asked somebody and they said to me, he was prepared to put in an hour's hard dying. Because of the sacrifices Christ made at the cross.
He wanted to go straight up then.
And you know what I mean? That in his mind, that Christ went through such torture. This is old school faith.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
This
is
the Catholicism of the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. Yeah. Now in its dotage. And he was kind of going, I hope that I'll put in a solid hours roaring. On account of the sacrifice Christ made
pain.
On the cross. Isn't that phenomenal?
Isn't it?
Unbelievable.
That he wouldn't mind doing that.
Yeah,
like he said
that
I don't mind if I'm roaring and fucking screaming. What that man went through on the cross, it's a small price for me to have to pay.
Do your suffering on earth like and then...
Away you go.
Isn't it phenomenal? Just old school faith.
But think of it, 93 years of age.
Yeah.
Think of the experience of life and what that man has seen.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? I know this man, he's quite successful, in his 70s now probably, early 70s, maybe not even 70 yet. And he says the thing he dreads most in life, and he'd be very wealthy, the thing I dread most in life, having to die. Like he said, I'm dreading having to die. He says I've too much living to do yet to die, you know. Isn't there...
Yeah, I was talking to some old people recently and I asked them, did they think about death and said, no, there's no point.
Yeah,
and I do think that thinking about death is something that happens maybe between your 40s and your 60s. And once you make it through that sniper's alley, that you kind of go, there's no point in wasting my time thinking about this. It's going to happen. So I will plow on with a lust for life rather than be. But when in your 40s and 50s, you're aware that it could happen at any time. The fact that it's not likely, it's possible, but it's not likely.
Yeah.
And that's what gives you the kind of the breathing room to think about it. But when you go over 60, it really could happen anytime. And they just, the realism of that is that people just go, no point in thinking about it.
Yeah.
Just plow on, like, no point in thinking about it.
You don't want to be saying, oh, I wish I did this or.
No. I told you the story, I must have, about the fella I was talking to who nearly died at sea. He was in the water and he wasn't sure if he was going to be rescued. And he was looking back on his life and in that way that you hear that people sometimes do when,
going in front of them.
And he said to me, I was glad of all the nights I got drunk.
Yeah, that's a nice thing to say.
Do you know that he was glad of all the nights that he went beyond himself?
Yes.
When you're at home and you're sober, you're kind of careful.
Yeah.
But there's something there's a chakra of generosity that opens up in your heart when you allow yourselves to get drunk with other people. Mm. And you've kind of won, like, some of the greatest memories in your life could be memories you have of when you were drunk with people. And I was talking to you during the week and we had a laugh about, this has happened to everybody who's ever got drunk, where you're in a hotel room and you're going to sleep in the nip and you wake up to go to the toilet, but you go out the wrong door, and before you know it, you're in the corridor
now
with no key card between the cheeks of your arse. So how are you going to get back into the room?
Have you ever heard these ones?
That is a bad situation.
Well, these are the things.
But it's
that
never happened to
in
me.
In the height.
It
of
only happens
inebriation.
To men, doesn't it?
Well, no. There's been. I'd say many a person has got locked out of a hotel room, and we have some good stories about that. Will I go first? So I was at a Christmas party in Dublin, and the radio show had finished for Christmas, 3 weeks or 2 weeks off, and a lad said to me, "I'll meet a lad from Mayo."
Don't trust him.
From Swinford, a good mate of mine.
Probably has butter.
No,
on his
no,
hand.
Not from Swinford. Sorry. He's not from Swinford. He's from Colchamach. Worse
definitely
again.
Has
oh
butter
Lord, Colchamach. He says, "I'm down in the Boar's Head." Come down. And I was lying in a 5-star hotel in my lovely 5-star.
And were you kind of drunk
hotel.
At this stage?
Right. This is out a little bit of the city. I like staying close to the motorway so I can escape to go.
Pure country.
I'd been in the hotel for 4 or 5 days. So it'd be this one of these fancy hotels that have a big bathtub at the window. Just on carpet, like a raised
carpet,
up platform.
Carpet.
You know, like one of these
pure glass.
All glass windows
unreal,
around the
unreal.
Toilet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One of these ones that there's no lights in the passageways. You go to your room, you can't even see where you're going. It's
no,
all
them.
Do you know those little? And
if
then
it's
you
a
see
suite
a little.
At all, you're yeah.
Them hotels
trouble.
Are designed for people having an affair.
or
two other. Double doors.
And these ones, you go, where's 219, 619? I can't see. And there'll be a little underlight under 619 to let your card in. I knew I stayed in this hotel regularly. They'd know me well. I got the phone call then. I knew I was finished. I finished the breakfast radio show that morning. I was lying in my bed at 11 and 12 saying, "I'll have a little snooze here because I am going at it tonight. I'm going into town and I'm going to get rat-arsed." 2 o'clock then, I was half watching a movie and the text came, "Meet me in the Boar's Head at 3:30.
Uh-oh.
Trouble.
Don't go.
Well, I jumped out of the bed like a 12-year-old in the shower, shaving, and got me Marc Jacobs on, and then all the boys and money and all, and I went in a taxi. The taxi took 25 minutes into Ranelagh and over the bridge in Portobello, and it's getting
pure excited.
I got down onto Capel Street and I could see the Boar's Head in the corner. I walked in, there was a few ex-Dublin GAA county players there with my mate from Mayo, and we went at it. And I said, the boys were all supping Guinness.
Yummy.
Right in the corner, 5 or 6 of us, and I had a lovely little pit of the counter for myself. The pints were coming and the boys were knocking them back. And there was great football stories. And I said, they said the golden question is at the start of a night.
Will.
What'll you have? And I went, I think I'll have a bottle of Budvar.
Budvar.
That's 8% Czechoslovakian Budweiser beer.
Pure gas.
Because I don't fancy fucking Heineken. Give me a bottle of Budvar in a Budvar glass, which is the original Budweiser. It's the original Budweiser.
All right.
It's called Budvar and it's strong.
8% alcohol.
Well, it's not 8, but it's well over 6.
At 3:30, you could have started with at least a Guinness.
No food in the stomach.
Uh-oh.
Budvar 1, Budvar 2, more stories, Budvar 3, Budvar 4. I knew at the back of my head I had to go to a TV rap party.
Oh, Jesus.
Above in a pub up there, the up the other side, way up the other side, the far side of Brooks Hotel on the corner, P-Max. And I said, right, I'll get up there for about 11. I was in the pub
Jesus
at 3:30.
Christ.
7 o'clock came and it was down. I was up in the jack, down again. And Budvar. Right then, I said I'd leave about 10:30. Now, I was well on my way. It was Christmas. I said I'd walk to PMAX.
Oh, good idea. That was a sensible approach.
Bad.
Oh.
Because the air hit me.
Oh.
Well, I got into PMAX and they were playing Queens of the Stone Age and there's all this designs and it's all sort of cool bohemian people. It was all like a Led Zeppelin psychedelic movie and they were like, yeah, and I was like, yeah. I walked in and I was hugging people. There was a TV wrap and they were all there. What do you have? And I was there, Budvar. Yeah. I stood at the counter and I knew I was getting drunker and drunker. And about 12:30, 1:00, I said, that's it, done. I just walked out of there, said nothing to nobody, got out, got into a taxi. The taxi was like a spaceship. Going back to the hotel, which was another 25 minutes out.
Oh, I'd get sick in the car.
It was light streaming by me. It was psychedelic. It was all over the shop. I can't remember a thing. Anyway, I got into bed, stripped naked. And I'm lying in the bed. I don't know where I was, what was happening. We used to call it helicopters. Maybe helicopters. There was no shred of light in the room. No shred of light in the room. And I woke up really quickly. Go towards the toilet, which is all glass panels. Put my hand on the panels, trying to get in.
So you didn't run
complete darkness. I don't even know where I am. Put my hands on the panels. Open this big heavy door, which is the big heavy door into this cool toilet.
Uh-oh.
And then I hear the click. Behind me.
Jesus.
And then I'm there going, where am I in this darkness? It's all darkness. I still think I'm dreaming. I'm feeling up along the passageway, bollock naked.
Don't
remember a thing. Then all of a sudden I hit something like a steel area. It was the shaft for the catering people. It was the fucking industrial lift. Right? And I get into the fucking lift. I hit the button.
Are you completely naked?
Yes. I don't know where I am. I'm off my fucking face on Alan Budvar. I'm out of it. And all I could see was a little panel. And I went, I pressed the button.
No.
I pressed the button. It said help. And I pressed it, right? And then I go, hello, who's that? And then I could hear, hello, who's this? I said, hello, who's this? Hello, where are you? I said, I don't know where I am. Where are you? You're through to the central office here in Cork for all those lifts or whatever lifts. You're in a lift in the hotel in Dublin. And they said the name of the hotel. And then I went, bing. And I went, oh, are you okay? I said, I'm fine. I think, yeah, no bother. And then I just went, oh, fuck, look at it. So then I was there going, balls. I started covering my shite. So then what am I going to do? I can't go down to reception. There's Christmas parties everywhere. then I'm like, oh, I can't even get out of this lift.
Uh-uh.
So then I go out to the fire escape and I walk down stairs, the cement stairs at the corner of the hotel. I go all the way down. Now I'm starting to realise I'm in a hotel. Now I realise I've been in Dublin for a few days. Now I could see lights outside on this busy motorway. And then I look out and I could see 100 yards up. There was two bouncers outside the hotel at the door, revolving door. And I'm there going, how am I, Jesus Christ, going to get a message to? I know the manager's on. I know the night manager. And then I jumped into a bush just close to them. And I went, hello, hello. And they're, hello. I said, come here. And then your man comes down and he goes, oh, yeah, Hector. I said, how's it going? Look at
I'm in a bush.
I'm in bollock naked at 3:00 in the morning outside the hotel in a bush. And he didn't bat an eyelid. And he goes, Hector, are you okay? I said, no. Get me up to 627 and send up fucking 6 keys quick. I'll meet you back up there. So I'm back up the stairs and I'm outside the door and your man comes, Hector, sorry, man, what happened? I said, long story. I got inside the room and I went, thanks, Peter, fuck. Do you know what I did the next day? I got up at 5:30, 6:00 in the morning because I wanted nobody to see me at breakfast. My missus rings me at about 7:40. Normally I'd be lying in bed looking for poached eggs and television on. She said, well, are you having a lie-in? I said, I'm in nothing, right? I'm coming home quick. Oh, my word. Fucking hell. You're in a lift. Where are you? Help.
Oh, my word.
I know when it happened, boys. I know when it happened. I know when we went wrong. And I know what the signifier was.
Us or...
the world in general. I've been looking for something interesting to watch on the television, and I have eventually found it. I love stuff about the Taliban and the undercover agents going across the Taliban and infiltrating,
yes,
because I think I could belong in that world. I think that I am half Arabic.
I think if you had a towel on your head, you'd probably put in.
A bit of fake tan on and just to grow the... And I think this strictness of full
Taliban
would fucking suit me. Just getting up. I'm already getting out of the toilets before, but I get up at
6:30 in the morning.
I'm up at 6:30 in the morning and I'm looking for an excuse to stop drinking. So joining Taliban would be perfect. I'm not sure they'd tolerate a bottle of Jamie once a week. But anyway, so I'm watching this Taliban type program and its course is half setting. I love any show that is shows, it shows a shot of a building and then it comes up in typing. Langley, Virginia.
Oh yeah, yeah, I like that bit. Yeah. CIA. It always creates suspicion.
Yeah. CIA headquarters, Langley, Virginia.
0600 hours.
Brilliant.
Any program with that?
Yes, you're in. You're in.
The fucking Taliban
and the Boer momentum.
You have my attention. So,
hello, Salakhmar. That's what they say. Lock in and lock real. Lock. That's what they're saying. Lock mask. Lock real. Lock. Hello. Lock real.
Lock con.
Lock mask. Lock con.
Lock dark.
Lock it all, yeah.
So Quinsultanian Bridge. Can't pronounce that ever.
Try it again there.
Quinsultanian Bridge.
Yeah, you have it there.
Isn't that right?
Yeah, more or less, yeah. So I'm watching. So we're in the bit where it's set in the Taliban and it's all in the mud hut walls and the kind of the dusty camps.
Yes.
And, you know, women walking around, they're covering head to foot and they're fucking...
Burqas.
Oh.
Who turned off the burqa?
Burqas. They're called burqas, no? Yeah. Or is that the boilers? Yes.
That's the thing for making tea.
Oh, yeah.
This fella, and I love the way they're long tunics and a blazer.
Over the white stuff or the white,
like, sure, they have the man dress on. Yeah. They have the beard and the angry eyes and the bit of mascara to give them a bit of definition, and they have an old kind of wrap around PLO scarf and a bit of and then they have the blazer
or a waistcoat
from McElhenney's just for biros and sweets
and their glasses
and their glasses and the key through there. And this fella had to now he didn't know, but he was going in town to get exploded. He didn't know. There was a fella in one of these places in Nevada with a joystick who was going to explode him. But your man had no fucking idea, of course.
He shouldn't have put the blazer on.
He was just heading into town. This fella checked into work at about 9:15. And this is the boy in Nevada and he's moving the joystick and he's 500 fucking miles up in the air and he sees this boy and he just presses the button and your man fucking explodes with no explanation. Like,
it's just walking down the street.
No, it's on telly.
It's on television. The difficulty is that...
Is this actually real or did this happen in your head?
No, this is but this actually happens where you be in a conversation with a few people and next thing... If you're in
the more the better.
If you're in the Taliban place, like, you'd be sitting around, you wouldn't know that a fella from Nevada would be looking at you or looking at one of you.
And
you
Langley. It's West Virginia.
Start.
And you'd be looking, next thing you'd fucking explode. Like, for no reason. You can't see anything in the sky, you've heard nothing. The next thing you're boof, and he's fucking gone. Anyway, so this particular boy he didn't know he was going to be exploded that day, but he was a marked man. And he's going to head in from his mud hut into the centre of the village, right? And he got on a Honda fucking 50. And a penny dropped in my head. That's it. That's where humanity is gone. Years ago, what would he get on?
A camel.
A camel or a donkey or some sort of a fucking piebald. He would have had a relationship with the yoke he was riding, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
He would have been an alive thing, a breathing thing, an eating, farting, shitting, sleeping thing, a drinking thing. And he's made of the same stuff. And him getting on this is a symbiotic yoke. The two of them together.
Some loyalty between them.
There's a connection between them.
I like the idea of the Honda 50.
But and the Honda, that's where it went wrong.
No, but we were reared on Honda 50s.
No, the Honda 50 is where it went wrong, and that's why he's going to get exploded from the fucking sky. If nobody... I'm telling you, the relationship between man and machinery is the
reason it's getting out.
It's the reason it's out of hand.
If we didn't have the Honda 50, we wouldn't have the machine to blow him up.
Fucking spot on.
Yes.
What could they do? Fucking...
throw eggs at him or something.
But sure, if we didn't have the Honda 50 in Ireland, there'd be no work done for 100 years. How would anyone have got anywhere around the farm?
Horses, your horse.
No, the Honda 50 was the workhorse of the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s.
You never did any work on the farm.
The Honda 50 was one of the greatest bikes of all time for country people.
You couldn't round up cattle, though.
You could.
You could not.
You couldn't pick stones with it or pick spuds or plant spuds.
One of the
Are you listening to her? You couldn't what?
Pick stones or plant potatoes.
How do you get to the bog?
Walk.
How do you get to the field with the stones? Walk. How do you get
Drive
into
the
town?
Tractor.
No.
The tractor's more bombs.
No, you see tractors. The Honda, don't knock the Honda 50.
A horse. The horse was better for everyone years ago. The horse used to be able to pick the stones. You'd put the rope around the stone. You put attach it to the
stop.
The horse and pull him on.
More importantly, you could take the horse into town, tie him up, have 18 bottles of porter.
Will I show you something mad?
Buy a load of chickens.
Nine little whiskies. And who take you home? The horse. Would the horse know where to go?
Yes.
Absolutely.
And would you get pulled over?
By what? Nothing. Of course you'd. A guard has never stopped a man from being drunk on a horse.
No.
Because the horse is in control.
That's it.
But many a man has been stopped in charge of a motorised vehicle.
Well, we're in trouble now because not alone is there Honda 50s, but there's phones and there's...
I think you're not giving enough. The Honda 50 to me is a sacred mode of transport in this country. I do see your point about machinery and technology and all that, but do not knock the Honda 50 that reared young lads and men and grandfathers and six of them on the bike to the Balm of Romance. Six on the Honda 50 and a young one on the back on the way home.
Tied together with fertiliser bags and baling twine. I know the type.
You know, but don't knock the Honda 50.
The greatest laugh I've ever had in my life was in a Honda 50 rally. We went from knock to knock. So
around the corner.
We went to knock out the road
and back in.
And back to knock. But I've never laughed so much in my life. Top speed of a Honda 50 is about 35 miles an hour. But it cannot stay at 35 miles an hour. It'll reach 35
and
you'll be there for maybe 3 or 4 minutes. And then she'll just slow down herself like she's out of breath. And then she pick up speed again. So what you had was you had about 400 men on Honda 50s all peaking at different times. And you'd be...
blue ones and red ones.
And you'd be passing somebody by and you'd be laughing at them because you're riding high. And then 4 minutes later, he'd be laughing passing you by. It was the most fun I've ever had on two wheels. But I would have to concur with Loretta. The day we stopped riding the animals was the day the sky started fucking exploding.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying to you. Is that there's...
We put our own nails in our own coffins then.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
No.
I was living in Bilbao. And I went into the Guggenheim was just after being built. And we walked by one day and it said, motorbike piece. So we said, we'll have a look at this.
Piece? What do you mean?
A motorbike
exhibition.
Oh, sorry.
And we walked in and I kid you not, most of the bikes in there were on a Honda 50 World Tour. And I just looked at the red Honda 50 in the middle of the Guggenheim in Bilbao. And I said, one of the great bikes in the world.
One of the funniest things I've ever seen on television is you on the Honda 50 in Thailand. Have you ever seen this, Loretta? It's the funniest thing. It's the end of one episode.
We're in Koh Samui. It's 29 degrees. We're finishing the shot. Roscoe's hanging out the back of a Hi-Ace with our driver. Up him, somebody, Mike. Just nice and easy now. 30 kilometres an hour. I'm here in my sarong and I'm doing a great piece called Shode Koh Samui. Tom Green at Tanif, Tosha Tropicule, Tosha Gaholin, August Shinneo, O Thailand, Gunia Nacht. Good luck! I'm supposed to pull out and I'm supposed to do a drive by. I don't know what I did.
My memory of it is that you were sitting there, because a lot of people wouldn't be, if you're not used to how fast the accelerator goes on a bike. That's the whole key to biking, is knowing.
And same with driving, wrist control.
It's all wrist control. You might think I need to fucking rev it to get it going, but you it's a millimeter of an inch, like, to get going. But Hector didn't know this, and he's a Sinead. That's all from us. I hope you enjoyed this fantastic. And he's on one side of the road.
Captain Cap, Samadhi Cap.
Oh, it's been great talking to you. Thailand is the most amazing place in the world. And he probably had this image in his head like a fucking easy rider just go back. And he said, good luck to you now. And fling, I swear to fuck, from one side of the road into the ditch on the other side.
Into a ravine. Straight down into a 30-foot ravine. And but before I realised it, I was down in a ditch. And I was
still accelerating.
And then Roscoe, the camera, keeps rolling. He goes, oh, it was so...
digging.
Digging yourself in.
Oh, what a great end to a show. Oh, yeah. Sawadi kap. Sawadi bye.
Well, everybody, I hope you've enjoyed our podcast this week. We'll see you next week. All things being well. This has been Tommy, Hector, and
Lorita.
Of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.